Hello, everyone. Welcome to Just Getting By. My name is Craig Jones, and I am joined, as always, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy, Craig.
How are you doing this beautiful Friday afternoon?
Wondering when the hell it became Friday, but that's okay.
Yeah, the week flew past, didn't it?
That it did.
Yep. So, Chemslave, you have a story you want to talk about, don't you?
Oh, no. Actually, yes, I do. I have a Verizon iPhone.
So do I.
I was smart enough to get on to get it while they had the unlimited data plan.
So did I.
Well, now we're learning that they're going to be optimizing the network.
Uh-oh. What does optimizing mean?
The people who... the 5% of data users with 3G devices on unlimited plans will be throttled when they use too much data at certain, I'm guessing, certain places at certain times. Maybe. At least that's what they're saying. That if you're in a congested area and you're using above their defined level of too much data, as in 2 gigabytes, they will throttle you if you're on a congested cell site. Which is disconcerting to me. Because I use internet radio program called Spotify. And I am right now have used 6 gigabytes of data. And I am about a week away, less than a week away from the end of this billing cycle. So I'm going to be fucked if I actually ever need to use 3G in a congested area.
Yeah, you might be. But they don't, do they say over 2 gigabytes? Or do they just give the 5% thing?
They give the 5% thing, but I've read somewhere else where that number that is 2 gigabytes, which is the start of the 5%, or something to that effect.
Because maybe I'm just naive, but I'm not too concerned by this. I use a lot of 3G data as well, not as much as you do, but I do use a lot, and I don't know. I think Verizon is more targeting those people that, like, stream Netflix every day for 30 days straight. And, you know, things like that, or constantly tether illegally to a laptop or something. You know,
Aren't you one of those people, Craig?
Well, I used to be, but I'm on the iOS betas now, so I can't jailbreak, so I can't do that. So I'm actually paying for 2 gigabyte tethering. So, you know, I personally am not terribly concerned. And they're not cutting data off to you, by the way. They're throttling you. And I would be surprised if throttling you meant putting you down below what would be, like, 2G data connection speeds. Like, when I was on AT&T, you never got to experience this because you never had an AT&T iPhone. Or any 3G-capable AT&T phone. But when I was on the iPhone for AT&T, many times where I lived, I wouldn't have access to 3G. One of the reasons why I switched to Verizon. But I would always have access to Edge. Edge is their 2.5 generation data connection. And it was slow as balls. It was really slow. But it was also surprisingly capable. You could listen to Pandora. I never had Spotify. It wasn't available in the United States when I had an AT&T iPhone. But I would be willing to bet that you could stream on Spotify over Edge. Anything but video. And even video you could do over Edge if you were lucky. That was hit or miss. But audio especially, you know, audio can handle a constrained bandwidth situation. So I personally, I use Pandora a lot when I'm driving. I've recently gotten sick of my personal collection of music, so I'm using Pandora. Yeah, I think a lot of people probably are. These services, Pandora, Mog, Audio, Spotify, Rhapsody, Napster, the new Napster, all these services are because people are starting to get kind of antsy with their own libraries and they want to experiment. But I'm not concerned by this phenomena of throttling. I don't think Verizon's going to be too gung-ho about doing this. I think it would be a negative for them to throttle too aggressively, because then they will be viewed as not having the greatest, bestest network in America. And the reason why you go to Verizon is to get a consistent coverage and consistent 3G access. And if a lot of people, or at least anecdotally, a lot of people are saying, oh, I'm getting throttled. Throttled. You know, that's bad publicity for them. I really think they're just going to be hammering the people that are obnoxious about their data.
So, to your according to your opinion, I shouldn't be worried.
Well, you know, actually, I kind of hesitate to say that because you have used a crap load of data.
See, I don't know where the hell the about 2 or 3 gigabytes of this went. Because I wasn't using much of anything.
Because I was gonna say, if you're just doing audio, like you don't have video streaming as well, right? It's just audio.
No, it was just audio. Yesterday I had 1,200 megabytes. I was like, where the hell did that come from?
I don't get that. It shouldn't be that much. So I think there might be something wrong on your end, to be quite honest with you. But if you're consistently doing over 5 gigabytes a month, you might actually, towards the end of the month, experience some throttling. I don't know. It is extraordinarily unusual for people to go above 5 gigabytes a month in 3G data usage. Although, you told me in private, not on the show, but you told me in private that when you're at home, you don't even connect to Wi-Fi. You just use 3G.
Yeah, I don't really worry about it. It's like it's on. I'm not messing around with stuff. It's pretty much the same speed I have. I don't feel that big of a difference from using 3G or using Wi-Fi.
Now, let me ask you this, though. Do you listen to what was it, Spotify, you said? Do you listen to Spotify a lot at home?
I do, but normally on the computer, so that shouldn't be the issue.
No, it should not be the issue. Because I was going to say, if you did configure Wi-Fi, and it would be a one-time thing, and then you would automatically connect to it when you came within range, if you did that, you would immediately cut out all of the bandwidth usage you have at home.
Normally at home, I normally use maybe like 30 megabytes.
I'm sure
a
it's
day,
not much.
So
yeah.
It's not much.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not much. But for you, quite frankly, I would do every little thing that you can to limit your bandwidth usage. Because you, I think, would easily be in that top 5%.
I'm normally always in the top 5% for using too much of something.
So, I'm not concerned. And I would still be surprised if you noticeably got slower bandwidth. I would still be surprised. Because I'm sure there are people on these unlimited connections that are, you know, pulling down 12 gigabytes, 24, you know, 50 gigabytes a month of bandwidth. And Verizon would just love to throttle them. I think it's those people, more than anybody else, that need to be concerned. And until you see evidence to the contrary, I wouldn't be too terribly concerned.
Okay, well, you sort of made me slightly less sad and crazy.
Yeah, you know, AT&T announced this. So did T-Mobile. Within the last 2 years, everybody but Sprint has. And every time the tech press makes a big stink about it, oh, they're going to throttle you. Oh, my God, this is going to be such a big deal. Hardly anybody ever sees any difference. Even with 6 gigabytes usage a month, I don't think you will either. I really don't. All right, so staying on the subject of technology, boy, do we have a soap opera for you. Last week, I discussed the then likely, but now confirmed, firing of Michael Arrington from TechCrunch. Now, for those of you that did not hear us last week, for those of you that try to block out anything having to do with Michael Arrington, and I understand if you do, let me just recap quickly the drama that's happened. Mike Arrington wanted to start a new venture capitalist fund company called Crunch Fund. And AOL, his employer, was going to be a 50% partner in the company, providing 10 out of a projected $20 million of capital. So everybody took that as being AOL's approval of the move by Arrington. Now, the reason why this was controversial was because TechCrunch, which Arrington, up until a few days ago, controlled, covers tech startups that would be applying for this venture capitalist money. And indeed, Michael Arrington often wrote or had other people write about companies that he funded. And there's even some evidence that he wrote negative stories about companies that refused funding from him or were competing with companies he was funding, you know, things like that. There are some pretty vax journalistic standards going over at TechCrunch. But at the same time, TechCrunch was never supposed to be an online, like, Wall Street Journal or something. It was not supposed to be like that. But anyway, Arianna Huffington pretty much canned him. Said, oh, no, you can't do that. You're fired. And then Tim Armstrong, the CEO of AOL, said, no, he's just, he's not going to be a full-time TechCrunch employee anymore, but he's going to be in the AOL venture capitalist wing of the company. But then there was a big brouhaha, and Arrington was forced out. But this week it got...
So does Huffington have that much power that she...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it looks like Arianna Huffington is the controlling force in the company now. She is the editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Media Group, which is the editorial arm of TechCrunch. That is their news division. And she is the undisputed ruler of that area of the TechCrunch empire. And she seems to, at least in regards to that section of AOL, she seems to have supreme authority there. Because Tim Armstrong contradicted her, but she ended up being the one who got her way. Now, with Arrington out, the question was, who was going to succeed him? And for a while, they had a co-editor relationship where Michael Arrington shared the title of editor-in-chief with a man named Eric Schoenfeld. And it was just assumed that Eric Schoenfeld would become the sole editor-in-chief when Michael left. And indeed, he did. But then, on, what was it, Saturday evening? Yeah, I think it was Saturday evening. One of the part-time columnists for TechCrunch, a man named Paul Carr, wrote, "I'm leaving TechCrunch. Here's why." And he basically said that Eric Schoenfeld cut a deal with Arianna Huffington behind Mike Arrington's back so that he would be the editor-in-chief of TechCrunch when Arrington was forced out.
I want to be completely shocked if that was true.
Well, the thing is that Paul Carr wrote a very acrimonious story about that, kind of airing dirty laundry for everybody to see, and it was on TechCrunch itself, which was a kind of dick move to do. It's an interesting article, and I recommend anybody who didn't see it check out our show notes at justgettingbypodcast.com and take a look at this article on TechCrunch, because it is it's a doozy. But then, one of the most well-known columnists for TechCrunch, M.G. Siegler, wrote on his blog that he found Paul Carr's post to be just a little bit tactless, he says. But he also found Eric Schoenfeld inappropriate. Now, what was so inappropriate about Eric Schoenfeld? Well, Eric Schoenfeld wrote a post the day after saying, "Paul, I accept your resignation." And he basically refutes everything that Paul said in his own post. So this is just like a big he said, kind of really odd story. It's almost difficult to talk about without having everybody read the articles. So Eric Schoenfeld has a TechCrunch post in response to Paul Carr's TechCrunch post, and M.G. Siegler has a post on his personal blog saying that they both handled the situation the wrong way.
Yeah, Schoenfeld probably should have not posted anything at all.
Yeah, well, I wasn't offended by Schoenfeld's post. I actually didn't think it was steezy. I thought it was restrained. I don't think I would have been as restrained if I was in his position. Especially if the allegations were unfounded. Now, I found the tone of Schoenfeld's post to be a little bit telling, in that I kind of got the impression that Paul Carr might have been right from a certain point of view. But that's neither here nor there. It's just a fascinating soap opera. And then you have another TechCrunch writer who I didn't even know about until today, named Robin Waters, spelled W-A-U-T-E-R-S. Waters. Anyway, and he said, that Robin is a he, he said that Paul Carr as well was out of line. But he wouldn't go so far as M.G. did and say that Eric Schoenfeld was out of line as well. He doesn't have enough balls to say that, apparently. But everybody should just go to the show notes and read the progression. I'm going to have these stories in chronological order. This is an epic story. This is so juicy. I encourage everybody to read these blog posts. There's going to be about 6 or 7 of them when all is said and done. Only at TechCrunch could you see so much angst played out in public. This is all because of Michael Arrington. It is classic Arrington. Just classic. What do you have to say, Kimslave?
It is one of those really interesting stories. I was like, I didn't follow it as closely as some people did, but I was like, sort of like, I saw cars, like, I'm leaving TechCrunch, just, holy shit, this has to be awesome to read this. And I was like, this soap opera is better than, like, anything you can see on TV.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
These are actual people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's great. Yeah, I'm curious to see if anybody else thieves. If Paul Carr is going to be the only one. Quite frankly, Paul Carr, he was a known columnist on TechCrunch, but he's not a big-time columnist on TechCrunch. If M.G. Siegler left, that would be a big deal. People like Sarah Lacey or Alexia Tsatsis or Jason Kincaid. I'm just rattling people. Even people like Steve Gilmore. There's a lot of people at TechCrunch who could leave because Michael Arrington left. That would make a lot more waves than Paul Carr leaving. That Paul Carr kind of puffed himself up a little bit too much, in my opinion. Made him see. He seems to think he's more important than he really is. I thought it was inappropriate that he wrote that column on TechCrunch, only because I don't think anybody gives a shit if he's there or not, to be honest with you.
Whatever you do, don't go to paulcarr.com.
What is there?
It's a picture of him. And Paul Carr lives permanently in hotels around the world, writing books about himself.
Oh! Oh, I thought this was going to be like a pornography site or something.
No.
Yeah, no, I got the impression Paul Carr is a self-obsessed, kind of annoying person. You know, like I keep saying, go to the show notes at justgettingbypodcast.com and read this all for yourself. It is, it will not be time wasted, I assure you. Do you have anything else to add, Chemslave?
At this moment, no.
Alrighty then. Unless I'm very much mistaken, I think that means we have just wrapped up the week. So, if you have any, you being the listener, if you have any suggestions about how we could improve the show, we would love to hear them. Email us. Our email address is feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. I'll say that again, feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. And also go to justgettingbypodcast.com to see blog posts about all of our stories, and even some non-podcast posts, such as live blogs from presidential debates and other miscellaneous stories. There's a lot of good stuff on that site, so take a look. And on that note, I think we're done for the week, and Chemslave, I think we will talk next Monday.
Yes, sleep.
Yes. All right, have a good week, Chemslave.
You too.